Evening. It's Tuesday evening, March 11th. Tonight's Shiur by Rabbi Feldman is sponsored by Lisa and Andrew Parver to commemorate the yahrzeit of Andrew's grandparents, Ida and Saul Altman, Chaya Hudl, Bas Rav Yaakov Leib, and Bezalel ben Avram Yehuda.
Okay, thank you very much. In the spirit of Adar and Purim, Mishanichnas Adar, Marim Nesimcha, seems as appropriate time as any, talk a little bit about the role of humor and laughter within a Jewish framework. So just to clarify what we're not going to talk about, it's not going to be stand-up comedy. So feel free to leave if you like. That's funny, you could try. It's also not going to be a list of which comedians are Jewish. Enough other places that you can find that out. But more in the, in the kind of the spirit representing this university in the spirit of a Torah model lecture, where exactly does humor and jokes fit in within a hashkafa, possibly within a hashkafa, just to kind of look a little bit at that. And I said I'm not going to talk about which community is Jewish, but just a quick point about that. Many sociologists have observed that indeed Jews make up a huge portion of the comedy business. And they usually commented that this was a reaction to persecution. You learn to cope by learning to develop a sense of humor. And what they don't mention is that this is from Reb Shamson of Falhirsch, who writes this in his commentary to the Chumash. And in the beginning of Parshas Peshalach, the Pasuk tells us that the Jews are getting a little nervous about the situation in the desert, and they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, they said, so what's going on? Is it that there were not enough graves in Mitzrayim, so you had to take us out to die in the desert? That was why you had to bring us here? So it's pretty clear that's not a serious question. Can't be they really thought that was what was going on. So as the Hirsch explains, that this is a sarcasm. They were basically cracking a joke because they were in a tense situation, and a way to cope is you learn how to develop a sense of humor. And he writes that he said that this is what Jews in generations since have learned how to do, and they realize that they have to cope by having a sense of humor. And that's certainly on a very pragmatic level before you get into anything more fundamental or anything deeper. So that's certainly step one about where humor can fit in. It helps you get through the day, helps you cope. So certainly as far as that's certainly an important goal, you want to be able to function. So if humor helps you function, so then we can see it valuable on that level, just in a very basic, pragmatic, almost life-saving level, before you get to anything else, certainly is valuable in that sense. And if we establish that it's valuable in that sense, so then it's not a great leap to say that if you can provide that for others, so then that's also a tremendous service. That's also a fulfillment of the chesed. And here you don't just have to connect the dots. The Gemara makes this statement pretty explicitly. The passage the Gemara has in the Masechet Tainim, the Gemara tells us that Broker Choza was in the marketplace. So sometimes if you're in a crowded place, so you want to see any celebrities around, you want to see any famous people. So he saw a very big celebrity in the audience. He saw that Eliyahu HaNavi was in this marketplace. He thought this was a good opportunity to find out who's connected upstairs, who has a special reward waiting for him. So he asked Eliyahu HaNavi, he says, tell me, who in this room has a special chelek, a special reward waiting for him in the next room? So Eliyahu HaNavi says, well, that guy, and those two guys over there. And then he disappears. So Broker Choza went up to the people and he said, tell me, what do you do? What do you do? He tried to investigate a little bit. And when he got to those two people in the corner, he said, what do you guys do? So they told him, the Anshei Beduchei Anan, we're jesters, we're comedians, kind of Dachinu Nativi, that we go up to people who are sad, and we cheer them up, we make jokes to give them a little bit of levity and to alleviate their circumstances. So that's something that's inherently valuable. So even if we couldn't figure out our own, the Gemara makes clearly the statement that this is something that earned these people a special chaluk and Olam HaBa. And I should just add, and kind of a few months ago we spoke a little bit about Tikkur Cholam, you do find the Pharisee studying the writings of the Rambam. Rambam has this in his medical writings, and it's in other works of halacha as well, that part of the obligation of somebody who is visiting the sick, part of what he does to alleviate his circumstances, he cracks jokes, he makes them laugh, and that's something, as Reader's Digest tells us, laughter is the best medicine. So this is something that we find extensively in the writings of the Rambam and other halachic sources. So in any event, so again, those are from a very pragmatic level. We find that in order to help yourself cope, and then by extension to help anybody else cope, so then that's something that certainly humor plays a valuable role in doing. So on that level, so we see a value from as far as that's concerned. On another level, so we also know that pedagogically it's valuable. You mentioned I should start with a joke. So we know that that's a tradition that we have, and that the Gemara both tells us this and expresses this. And on the one hand, the Gemara tells us it was a Rav. The Rav would start every shir with a milsa de bedusa. He would start a shir with a joke. And it's a little bit of a question, because the Gemara and Tosfos raised the issue that it doesn't seem to be consistent with the image that we have for how Talmud Torah should be conducted. We have a Masorah that we try to emulate the atmosphere at Har Sinai, where the Torah was given to us, the Emu, the Yira, the Rasis, the Zayah. The Torah was given to us with a tremendous atmosphere of awe. That's why it used to be that we were only able to learn standing up. It's only a concession to our frailties nowadays that we are able to sit down when learning. So how does cracking a joke, has that fit with that? So the Gemara really raises this, Tosfos raises this, and it comes up with two answers that either, and this is maybe something we'll come back to, that maybe the content has to be serious, but the beginning and the end could be a joke. And the other possibility is that maybe the Talmidim have to be serious, but the Rebbe, he can be joking around. He can be having a good time. The ones listening, they have to be serious. So that's an interesting discussion. Maybe we'll be able to come back to that a little bit, how we reconcile those different attitudes. But on the one hand, whatever it is, the Gemara does tell us that this was a tradition to start a share of the Moshe B'duchsa. And we also find it, if we know where to look, you find it throughout Shas. Somebody once asked Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, said, "Rabbi, are there any jokes in the Talmud?" And he responded, "Yes, but they're all old." So that's part of the problem. We don't really have the same sense of humor, so we don't really know where to find them. But if you do know where to find them, every once in a while, you come across something which is clearly meant to be humorous. There was a journal that the Bar Ilan University publishes called the Badag, called Rachacha Da'ehu, based Dalad Dalad. And it once had an article that was called, the English title was, "Hidden and Revealed Humor in the Babylonian Talmud." And I can't tell you everything it said, because it was very long and very fancy academic Hebrew, and it was quite a chore to read it, but it definitely had a lot to say and a lot of charts. It definitely had what to find. But perhaps one of the more famous examples people are familiar with, brings us out of Purim, takes us to Pesach. The Gemara in the beginning of Pesachim has a well-known discussion. The Gemara talks about the obligation of Bedikas Chametz. So you have to look in the areas in your house where you tend to bring food, so you have to check there for Chametz. So the Gemara talks about a chulda. A chulda is a weasel. And the concern is that maybe you have a weasel in your house who's going to grab bread and is going to take it somewhere where you wouldn't normally bring it. So maybe you have to worry not only about where you bring the bread, but also where the weasel might be likely to drag the bread. And in that context, the Gemara raises a very strange problem that maybe during the week before Pesach, so maybe the weasel, knowing that there's not going to be any food for the next week, is going to store up extra bread. It's going to be a bigger problem. So that'd be a very impressive weasel as a palm pilot that knows exactly when Pesach is coming up, knows the leap year, knows the whole story, knows when Pesach is, to hoard the bread in advance. Very hard to imagine that you have such intelligent weasels. So the Gemara raises the question, is this weasel, this is a prophet? Is the key chulda neviyahi? This chulda knew what's going to happen? So this is a pun, because you know from Tanakh there was a neviyah named chulda, and that's what the Gemara said. Chulda was a neviyah, yes, but this chulda is probably not a prophet. To know that it's going to be Pesach, it's probably not likely that it's aware to hoard the chametz in advance. So that's the more blatant example, but if you know where to look, you have a sharpener of eye, it's kedai to go over Shas many times in order to try to find all the jokes. So you see that Chazal advocated this openly and also utilized it. And the benefits are sort of self-evident. On the one hand, you get people to pay attention, you get people to maybe relax a little bit in the positive sense. And also, as Rashi over there in the Gemara and Shabbos, which talks about the Moshe B'duchsa, so Rashi explains the purposes of what the Gemara calls Hachavas Hadas, which is a phrase that appears in a couple places. A little bit hard to pin down exactly what that means, but it seems to mean broadening of the awareness, or making the mind more receptive to understanding things. So apparently when you get people a little more comfortable, so then you have more access to communicating with them, and that seems to be a part of what's accomplished through this idea of the joke that's involved in this year. So that again is really from a pragmatic perspective, this idea of it being beneficial pedagogically, that's again a pragmatic concern, which we can add to the ones we mentioned before of helping yourself cope and helping others cope and being able to communicate effectively when that's something that we want to do. But there is perhaps something more fundamental maybe that maybe goes to the root also of this time of year. The Gemara has a very surprising comment in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah. We mentioned palm pilots a minute ago, so the Gemara says if you want to know what a Kadosh Baruch Hu's palm pilot is like, if you want to know what God's schedule was like, you want to know what his day is broken up into, the Gemara tells us the schedule, tells that he spends some time judging the world, some time learning Torah, and some time playing with Leviathan, playing with the big fish. So it's very hard to understand what's the religious value in the Talmud telling us this. Why do we need to know that God spends part of the day playing with Leviathan? And the Soloveitchik explains that the Shechter has in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav as a kuntris in the beginning of the first volume of Nefesh HaRav as a kuntris of Halachta B'drachav. As we've mentioned here many times in the past weeks, the Gemara tells us that the obligation of Halachta B'drachav means that we have to follow the Midos of the Kadosh Baruch. And that's the most blatant fulfillment of this mitzvah. But as the Rav apparently darshaned in a number of contexts, there are other cases also that whenever the Torah or the Gemara tells us something about how a Kadosh Baruch Hu acts, it's meant in a halachic sense. It's meant to tell us that we have this mitzvah of halachta b'drachah, so we have to know what God's ways are so we know how to fulfill it. The Rav explained also this one. We're told Bereishis Bara Elokim, so a well-known essay in Reflections of the Rav and other places that we have to know to be created. So God tells us that we told about God's creativity. So too here is why we told about playing with Leviathan. The Rav said, so he said, no, you can't take everything so seriously. That there are some things that you have to be able to say, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to laugh at. And in order that we should get this lesson, so therefore we have to be told about the Leviathan. And I think that what's being said here is really something more fundamental that's really specific to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midos. And the idea is that if you can see the world with a divine perspective, if you can see Kriyachal through God's eyes, so then you'll be able to recognize what's a big deal and what's a little deal, that some things are important and some things aren't important. And if you think everything's equally important, then besides the fact that you can't live, you can't function, but you also can't appreciate what really is important. And therefore, in order to be able to appreciate what's really important, you have to be able to have a sense, which essentially is what a sense of humor is a sense of perspective, to know what's a big deal, what's a small deal. And that's really something that is inherently divine, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can see the whole world at once. So he knows what's a big deal and what's a small deal. And we don't really know. We try. We try to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu as much as possible. We try to get that perspective as much as we can. So then we could try to see, and we try to, when we laugh, when we take something as humorous, it means that we have a little bit of a sense that this is not as big a deal as other things might be. And perhaps taking that vein could understand one of the few places in the Shas where you find perhaps what sounds like an anti-humor perspective being expressed. And the Gemara in the Shachas Brachas tells us that there's a prohibition that's connected with humor. The Gemara says that the Asher La'adam L'malei Shchok Piv Ba'olam Hazeh. This is based on the pasuk we're familiar with from Shema Malos before benching, that we say that Oz Yimalei Shchok Pinu, that there will be a time in the future, after the Geula, then we'll be able to fill our mouths with laughter. And until then, so to be totally given over to laughter, L'malei Shchok Piv, that's inappropriate. And that seems to perhaps represent this idea as well, that there is, when you have the perspective, when you can look back and you can see how everything made sense, so then as the expression goes, someday we'll look back and laugh. Someday we'll look back and we'll see that what we thought was a big deal and was driving us crazy is really not a big deal. And we see how everything fits and everything makes sense. So then you look back and you laugh, then you malish chokpinu. Nowadays, we're not at that point yet, so we don't really have this ability to malish chokpinu. We are striving for a divine perspective. We're looking for a lachta b'drachah to try to understand as much as possible what's a big deal and what's not, but we don't really have that picture which is reserved for that time of Geula. So perhaps following this path, we could maybe suggest why it is that this has such a prominent role in the context of Purim. At Purim, we find that there is this big emphasis on joking around, this big emphasis on humor, and it could be that perhaps this is an extension of this idea, that we know that there's a subtext, there's a sub-theme in Purim, which we don't always talk about so often, but it comes from the Gemara, and you read a little bit about Purim, it's discussed in more length, and that is that Purim, in addition to everything else, Purim is a time of Kabbalah Satara. As the Pasuk says in the end of Megillas Esther, it's a Korean exit, it says either Kimu V'Kibel or Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. So the Gemara in two places has different drushes on, as the girl explained, one drush on the Kri and one drush on the Ksiv. So the words mean Kimu V'Kiblu. So says the Gemara in Mesach HaShabbos and Daf Peches, the Sugi of Kabbalah Satorah, that this Kimu Masha Kiblu Kfar, that the Jews upheld that which they had already accepted. And that's a reference to a perhaps more well-known part of that Gemara, where the Gemara tells us that really at Har Sinai, that even though we said Nasa V'Nishma, so we didn't really accept the Torah fully willingly. And it's a little bit of a spirit, which we'll discuss in a second. And on the one hand, the Pesukim make it sound like we were very excited, Nasa V'Nishma, and yet the Gemara tells us it wasn't exactly like that, and that we became excited after we were forced, after God said he's going to take a mountain and drop it on our head. So we said, oh, sure, in that case, now you put it that way, how can we refuse? So that's when we really accepted the Torah. And that's why Kimu V'Kiblu, that was only later, so many generations later, after the miracle of Purim, then Kimu Masha Kiblu Klai, then the Jews willingly upheld that which they had accepted at Har Sinai. So as far as the sphere between Nasa V'Nishma and this attitude that Gemara is discussing, so the Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Noach fills us in a little bit more, and he addresses that question. And there the Medrash says that there is a distinction between the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaalpeh. That the Torah Shebichtav, that was hard, but okay, we're willing to take that. That seems manageable. But the Torah Shebaalpeh, which has all of the stringencies and all of the diyukim and all of the populim, that seems way too much. That we were not willing to accept. And it was only then, it was only after time of Purim, that we were able to accept it willingly. So the theme seems to be that, here again, that at the time of Matan Torah, so things seemed from that limited perspective, in the moment, it seemed like it was too much. It seemed like it was a burden. It seemed like it was something that was oppressive, something that we weren't interested in. And it was only in the aftermath of the miracle, it was only after the incidents of Purim, that we could then look back and we can see, oh, this is something beautiful, this is something we can come to appreciate, and we have to have the long view of history to look backwards and see it. But that's apparently what Purim is telling us, so that's, again, if that's what humor is all about, that we can eventually come back and see how things fit in, and that would seem like it was a problem, is really beautiful. So then Purim very much is really all about that. And that could also perhaps be related to an idea that you find in some Achronim. It's interesting, normally we have a prohibition that one's not allowed to get married on Yom Kippur. So if one wants to get married on, say, Chol HaMoed Sukkot, Chol HaMoed Pesach, you might think there isn't really a prohibition of Melacha on that time. So what should be the big deal? So Gemara tells us, no, it's actually understood by the Rishonim to be an Issur D'Oraisa, because of the Samachta B'Chagecha V'lo V'Ishtecha, that you're supposed to have a Simcha Yom Kippur, and not the Simcha in your personal happiness of your wedding. They're going to dilute each other. So to get married on Chol HaMoed Sukkot is actually worse than getting married on Shabbos. To get married on Shabbos is an Issur D'Rabbanan. To get married on Chol HaMoed Sukkot is an Issur D'Oraisa, probably a violation of the Samachta B'Chagecha. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins, others disagree, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that it's permissible to get married on Purim. And again, some of the contemporaries of Shulchan Aruch didn't understand this. That even if you want to say that Purim is different than Sukkot because Purim is a Drabbanan, so why don't we say that on a level of the Drabbanan it's not appropriate to get married? We should say that even if it's not in HaTorah, but the Simcha of Purim should be patterned after the Simcha of Sukkot, and we should assume that at least on a level of the Drabbanan, it shouldn't be permitted to get married on Purim. So a lot of approaches the Achronim have, except Sofer has a whole truth about this, a lot of discussions of what could resolve this. And there are some Achronim who suggest that there's a fundamental difference between the Simcha of, say, Sukkot or Pesach, and the Simcha of Purim. That on Sukkot and Pesach, so we have a din of v'shamachta b'chagecha, which means you have to rejoice in the yontif. That's what your obligation of the day is, to find simcha in the yontif specifically. And therefore, any competing simcha is going to dilute. Any competing simcha is going to take away from it. It's not the time for that. But when it comes to Purim, so the Pasuk says, it's a yom mishta v'simcha. It's a day in which there is celebration and happiness. So to have anything said, that's not appropriate. That's going to fast on Purim, that's going to contradict. But to have other types of simchas that are not about Purim, that's not necessarily a problem, because the Pasuk doesn't say the Shemachta of the Purim. The Pasuk says that Purim is a day of simcha, a day of mishta, which perhaps is this theme, that maybe the nature of Purim is that we are looking for joy and all the little things in life that we don't necessarily pay attention to. So anything that directs us towards joy, anything that directs us towards happiness, that's a fulfillment of what Purim is all about, and therefore perhaps the spirit of developing a sense of humor became embedded in the very character of the day. So if that's the case, so we do find the tradition that's developed of certain things that take place on Purim. It's not explicit in the Gemara, it develops later than that, but you do start finding it in Rishonim already. You find in Rishonim, this is a little different than what we are thinking initially, but you find that, for example, in the laws of Nezikin, or in the laws of Geneva, that there's basically a more relaxed attitude towards property rights on Purim, because the assumption is that we want people to be able to celebrate and have a good time. And if we know that if we spill a little bit on somebody's carpet, that he's going to go crazy, so then it's going to be harder to relax and have a good time. So you find an attitude that there is a different atmosphere on Purim, that there's an attitude of mechila, that people presumably want each other to be able to have a good time. So for small things, they're mochel. If you burn his house down, he's not going to be mochel. But if you spill something on the carpet, so then he's going to be mochel. He's not going to have such a, he's not going to have such a kpeda. And in later generations, you find other things. In the yeshivas, two other things that you find, both of which are very controversial. On the one hand, you find the concept of Purim Torah, of divrei Torah that are less than fully serious. And you find the idea of the Purim Spiel, of plays that were put on, either perhaps taking off of biblical stories or taking off the faculty, taking off of the Rebbeim. And again, both of those are very controversial. We'll talk about that in a second. A lot of post-Gemara chuvos against it, a lot of yeshivas that have this practice. They, as far as Purim Torah is concerned, Rabbi J. David Weiss told me once that there was a certain yeshiva who got up on Purim and gave a shiur for 2 hours. It didn't seem to be humorous at all. He just, it was a very standard shiur where he took two Rambams that were contradicting each other, the Stira and Rambams, and he spent 2 hours explaining how the Stira could be answered. It wasn't funny at all. So afterwards, somebody came over to him and said, Rebbe, it's Purim. So the Rebbe responded, what do you mean? I made up both Rambams. The whole thing was a joke, and he didn't pick up. So there is this atmosphere of Torah that's a little bit less serious. There's a tradition of that. You know, some people are into that, some people are less into that. And then the Purim spiel, so again, there are a lot of written shuvas where many poskim were very apprehensive about the Purim spiel, and we can talk about some of those objections in a second, because they're certainly very serious ones. And at the same time, so there were many yeshivas that have this minig and continue to have this minig, and it goes back to Volozhin, as Shekla pointed out in the past. Our yeshiva was founded, Yeshiva University was founded by people who came over from Volozhin, so apparently we follow all the practices from Volozhin, almost all the practices from Volozhin. So in Volozhin, it's documented that they had a that they did have a Purim spiel. That was a practice that goes back all the way then. And the top Talmud in Volozhin was a young man by the name of Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Kot, and he did apparently a spot-on imitation of the Netziv, the Rashiv at that time. And that was, I guess, apparently what was done then. And later on, many generations later, the Netziv's great-grandson was a Talmud of Rav Kook's, and he apparently was able to do a perfect imitation of Rav Kook. Of course, responded, okay, I've been paid back for my activities as a youth, and this minig continues. So we have this minig in our yeshiva as well, following, I guess, the practices from Volozhin. But it's something that we also, at the same time, we're mindful of what the concerns are, the concerns of the poskim who wrote shuvas against it. Again, there are there's quite a literature. You have an easier time finding printed literature that's against than other position. And we understand what the concerns are. The concern of Chas v'Shalom of Habanas Panecha v'Erev Barabim, the concern of Bizayin to Kavodat Torah, making fun of the Rebbe, making fun of the faculty. So that's, of course, a very serious issue. That's not something that we're going to take lightly. And that's why, first and foremost, we recommend that all such spiels should be done under rabbinical supervision. Very carefully. I remember one spiel that I was involved in one summer, and the rabbinical supervisor said you have to be very careful what not to say. Like, for example, don't say Rabbi so-and-so was this, Rabbi so-and-so was that. All these things we never would have thought of in a million years of saying. He's feeding us all the stuff. Chas v'Shalom, what are you thinking? So you have to know what you're doing. You have to have rabbinical supervision. And you have to know who you're dealing with. And that's something that is always better to err on the side of caution. People have different sensitivities. And it might be kedai to go back to that point that we mentioned before about the question of joking during shir. I said that maybe the beginning and the end, but not the content. It's a good rule of thumb when dealing with people also. You find that people are much more ready to laugh at themselves, so to speak, when it's something that's external to them, when it's something that's stylistic or something that's not very fundamental to who they are. But when you joke about people's essence, it's much more hurtful. So you have to know also how people respond. So again, this is an area which is tricky and which really should only be undertaken with wise guidance. But it is in the Surah that exists, and it's important to be careful for all of these pitfalls, which are very serious pitfalls. But perhaps also in addition to all of these issues, in a broader philosophical sense, there's another concern that we have, and that concern, especially this week as we think about the Parsha Zohar, so a very relevant concern is you don't want to turn into a Moloch. Seems to be a reasonable thing to try to avoid. I'm referring to the fact that there is an imagery that Chazal have, which is a very surprising imagery. If you were going to cast the Amalek movie, if you were going to make a movie about this primary archetypal villain against the Jewish people, there's all kinds of images that we could draw from as far as how you would picture, in an easy to understand way, how you would picture this type of evil. I wouldn't think that the first choice would be floppy shoes and a big red wig and a big red nose. I wouldn't picture him as a clown. But you find that Chazal used that imagery. And the pasuk says, "Let's taki upeshi yayin," that this pasuk is identified by Chazal, "Let's taki," is hit, that's the reference to Amalek. Amalek is called the let's. So that's very strange. It's very strange imagery to say that Amalek is a clown. We use the word let's in modern Hebrew to mean a clown. We use leitzanus to mean joking around. So how does that at all fit Amalek? How does that have anything to do with how you would picture Amalek? So Rav Hutner discusses this in the first piece in his Tachat Yitzchak, and he explains that, first of all, we have to understand what leitzanus means. When we translate it as humor or as joking around, it's more a modern usage. It's not really the sense in which the Talmud means it. It's not really the sense in which Chazal uses it. And he has a whole explanation there where he quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, in his commentary, to Perkei Avos, interprets the pasuk, Yishlof Yom HaHalalo, says that a person is recognized based on his praise. So what does that mean? It means you can recognize what a person is about based on what people say about him. So that's usually not the case. You know, there are many wonderful people who nobody says anything about them, and there are many people who get praised and who aren't so wonderful. I mean, that Yishlof Yom HaHalalo, people can be judged based on what people say about them. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains, there's no Adam Nikr Lefi Mashahu Mahalel, but a person can be judged based on what he praises. If you want to know what a person is really about, so you look at who he praises, what he praises, what does he value, which is funny to say, if you can tell more about a person from that than what he actually is. It's not actually so fair to judge people based on what they are. You think that's the most fair thing. But apparently not, because people sometimes are held back from reaching what they're really striving for, and someday, God willing, they'll get there. But you can tell what people are really about based on what they esteem. So Rav Hutner establishes that the really, in a sense of the word, the most significant ability a person has, we call the koach ha'hilul, the ability to praise things and to value things. That's the most valuable tool a person has. And the opposite of that, we call the koach ha'zilzul, The idea of knocking something down, of taking away the esteem from something. So that's the opposite of Hillel, and that's therefore a very destructive power. And so we talk about Leitzanus. Leitzanus really means, should really be more accurately translated, and often it is translated this way, as a cynic. You often find it translated as scoffers, one who scoffs. And a cynic is somebody who doesn't believe that anything's important. Believes that nothing is really to be valued, nothing has any significance, and you can make fun of everything. And that's a very dangerous trait, and that's presumably in most of the context where you see Leitzanus criticized, it's really talking about this quality, that nothing is important, that nothing has any stature in the world. So that's very dangerous. That's something that can really undermine everything. We know the Bali Musa say that all the Musa in the world can't have any effect on somebody who's elect, because if you don't think anything's important, so it's not going to make a difference. You can speak till forever, you're not going to get through, because the person doesn't have the ability to take anything seriously. So that's why when the Gemara says that, Fetah goes on to explain that kolu tzenusa asura chutzmel tzenusa da'avodas kachav, that all leitzanus is prohibited except for leitzanus of avodah zarah. What's that about? Because really scoffing and cynicism is inappropriate, but avodah zarah calls for it, because avodah zarah is the ultimate misuse of the koach ha-hilul, of the ability to praise something. So the ultimate misuse of that, the ultimate praise is worship, and idol worship is the ultimate misuse of that ability. So that should be counteracted by cynicism, knocking down the importance of the appropriate antidote to avodah zarah. But in general, it's a very destructive attitude, and that's what the Gemara says, Kol Senusa Asur. So what does it have to do with Amalek? So we know that Chazal have the imagery of Amalek, that why was Amalek so significant in Jewish history? Because the Jews were considered formidable at that time, as immediately after great miracles had taken place, after Kriyas Yamsus, the whole world was scared of the Jews. And we know that the imagery Chazal gives us, Asher Karcha Bederech, they made us cold, that it's as if the Jews were a hot bath on Basir Rosachash, and everybody is afraid to jump in. So Amalek comes and jumps in first, and now everyone else says, okay, it's not so bad, we can jump in also. So the imagery is that here people were taking the Jews seriously, people were considering them to be formidable, and Amalek saying, yeah, they're not such a big deal, they're not something you have to be scared about, we can knock them down too. And so everyone else says, yeah, you're right, we can knock them down also, it's not something to take seriously. So that's the quality of Leitzanus, which Amalek therefore embodies. So when we talk about a sense of humor, so this is really in addition to all the other practical concerns that we have to be careful for, and not to hurt people's feelings or to embarrass people, but also to cross the border into Leitzanus. So Leitzanus is a very, very serious problem, which undermines everything that we're talking about, because if we value humor because of the ability to put things in perspective, to be able to say this is a big deal and this is not a big deal, because we've acknowledged if you believe everything's a big deal, then first of all you can't function, but also you can't appreciate what's a big deal. So certainly if you go to the other extreme, you say nothing's a big deal, so then of course you've undermined that whole goal. So the whole nature of what we're striving for, we talk about a Jewish sense of humor, is we're looking for the middle, we're looking for that point where we can appreciate what's a big deal and what's not, where we have that sense of chachma, we're emulating a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, so we don't take everything seriously, but at the same time we do take the right thing seriously. So that's why we need that balance, and one could perhaps argue that that's maybe all the more so why we need Parsha Zacha the week before Purim. The normal understanding is that it's because of Haman representing the tradition of Amalek, so Chazal wanted that the mitzvah Menat Torah, remembering Amalek, should be done right before Purim, because we should highlight that connection. But one could also argue in addition that Purim we want to focus on developing the sense of humor, so before we do that, in the days before that, we want to also emphasize that we shouldn't take it the wrong way, that we shouldn't go towards cynicism, so we're reminded right before that of the power of Amalek, of Asher Karcha Bederech, that that's not what we're looking for, and we're looking for a Jewish sense of humor, which is perhaps what this season is really meant to exemplify. So just maybe we'll end in a minute just to sum up what we spoke about so far. So we spoke about the fact that we find the various values to a sense of humor in general. In a pragmatic sense, we have the idea that so you can cope with life, that life's challenges don't get you down. That's what Shamsun Rafal Hirsch comments in the beginning of Parashas B'Shalach. on the pasuk of Hamabli and Kvarim v'Metzayim that the Jews were cracking a joke, and that Jews since then throughout the generations have learned to cope that way, and that also therefore to do it for somebody else is certainly a chesed. That's something that you can provide a valuable service, and that's what the Gemara says in Tainis, that those people who were comedians had a special chelik in Olam Haba, and that's what the literature on Tikkun Cholam often draws on, this value one can serve towards somebody who's sick, and if they make them laugh, if they're able to tell them jokes, then that's supposed to have a very positive effect on their matzah. In addition to that, we also find pedagogically that as far as communicating, that there's a value to being able to crack a joke, as the Gemara tells us about the Moshe B'duchsa, and we talked about how that's weighed against the idea of Emir Vereshus of the Zeya, about the serious atmosphere of learning, the two answers that are given. Either it's the beginning and the end can be a joke, but the middle has to be serious, or the Talmidim has to be serious, and the Rebbe can be joking. And then the fact that the Gemara itself has jokes throughout, perhaps most famously the Gemara about Chulda Neviya. And that's, as Rashi explained, is valuable for Hachavas Adas, for broadening the mind, and also for other reasons that we understand. But perhaps on a more fundamental level, so the Gemara tells us from the beginning of the Zara that Kadosh Baruch Hu spends part of his day playing with a big fish, with Leviathan, and the Salvation explained. For we're told this so that we could fulfill the mitzvah of the Halachta Bedrachav, that we should know how to follow in God's ways. That just like he doesn't take everything so seriously, so we too shouldn't take everything so seriously. And the point being, perhaps, that it's by his very nature, a divine perspective, we'll see where everything falls into place. And we strive for that, even though we don't really have that. That's something that's really fundamental to a Kadosh Baruch Hu's view. We strive for his view and try to see the world that way as much as possible. But we can't really do it yet, and that's why the Gemara says that it's also a malish chokiv olam hazeh, but there will be a time when you look back and laugh, azim malish chokpino, when we see the world in a long view of history looking backwards, then we'll see everything fits in. And we suggest that maybe that's why Purim especially is about this, because the Gemara tells us that Purim is a time of Kabbalah the Torah willingly, that Kima v'Kiblu, that first we took the Torah not so willingly, and then Purim came and we looked back and we appreciated what the Medrash Tanchuma tells us, Torah Shabbat Peh was too burdensome, we didn't want to take that, so now we can look back and see how we appreciate it. And maybe that's really the atmosphere of Purim as a whole, that Purim is about saying that we can look back and appreciate things, and maybe that's why we find that the atmosphere is not just that we have to celebrate Purim, but that we can celebrate life in general on Purim, and that's perhaps why the Shulchan Aruch says you can get married on Purim, even though normally you can't get married in a day, which is a Simcha Mana Torah, which is normally more focused on that. And that's where we perhaps where we have this atmosphere and this tradition of a different attitude on Purim than other days. In Rishonim already we find a more relaxed attitude towards Purim, towards property rights, as far as Velchus Mezika and also Shkineva and the like. And when it comes to Yeshivish tradition, so we find the controversial practices of Purim Torah and of Purim Shpil. Purim Shpil, there is an extensive literature in Poskim against, and there's also a tradition in Yeshivas of that. And we discuss some of the different pitfalls and why it's something that's a little bit risky. We certainly want to steer very clear of the Habanas Kneh of Rebbe Rabin, or of hurting anyone's feelings, or of Bizayin Kavadat Torah, or anything of the like, and that's why we recommend that these activities only be done under strict rabbinical supervision. And we discuss perhaps distinguishing between the outside and the tochen here as far as people are concerned also. And then we mentioned that perhaps more philosophically, in addition to these concerns, there's also a broader concern of turning into a malik, that Chazal have the imagery that a malik is a let. Let's, how does that fit? Because the let means you don't take anything seriously. The koach ha-hilul is how you value things in life, and the koach ha-zilzul is knocking things down, and a cynic doesn't take anything seriously. And Amalek represents that because he taught the world not to take the Jews so seriously, not to be so scared of them. So therefore, that asher karcha baderech, absolutely opposite of what we're looking for when we talk about humor. And we try to find the balance, try to find the middle, and maybe that's why we have Parshas Zachar right before Purim, in addition to the Haman Amalek imagery and the Haman Amalek wink. On the day of Purim, when we focus on developing a sense of humor, we also first warn ourselves that we don't go to the wrong extreme, to turn into a malik, to have the attitude of cynicism. That's the opposite of what we're going for. But we are looking for instead cultivating a genuine Jewish sense of humor that should, God willing, the more we develop that perspective, should bring us closer and closer to the time when truly az yimalei shchokpinu usaneinu rina. Shkach, a wonderful other.